You're listening to StoryShare, brought to you by the Interview Girl Foundation.
Welcome to StoryShare, a podcast from interviewgirl.com that brings you inspiring stories and advice each week. Today is an episode from the Interview Girl Foundation's World War II Stories series. Today's story is about a veteran who served in Europe during World War II. Mr. Walter Driggs taught Interview Girl the importance of getting it done. Mr. Walter Driggs lived in Mexico. He and Interview Girl had several phone interviews, and he sent her materials about his experiences in World War II, including a book about the combat history of the 8th Infantry in World War II. In the back of the book, he wrote Interview Girl a note that detailed, "I was born on April 16, 1922. The first time that I read this after having it all this time was April 13, 2002. I got the book in 1945. Below his note, he wrote, 67 years. Interview Girl then paged through the book before she thoroughly read it, and she found certain parts with a highlighted yellow circle around them. She noticed Mr. Driggs' handwritten notes above and to the side of some paragraphs. From Mr. Driggs, she learned about the history behind an infantry division, a story behind the story. Walter Driggs' story is one individual who was part of the 8th Infantry Division of the American Army in World War II. However, the actual story of the 8th Infantry Division is a story that started long before World War II. In September of 1940, the 121st Infantry was inducted into federal service at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where on November 22, 1941, it replaced the 34th Infantry as a member of the 8th Division. The old gray bonnet remains to this day the emblem of the 121st, as well as its regimental song, Faciendum Est. It shall be done, is its motto. The Infantry Division's regimental song perfectly places Mr. Driggs in today's story share lesson, which is to just do it. Mr. Driggs served in Europe during World War II. As the time for invasion of Western Europe drew near, the training program was expanded to include battalion and regimental combat exercise, command post problems, and the study of German tactics. Elementary amphibious training was given to all troops. As with many other veterans that Interview Girl was privileged enough to meet, Walt's sense of humor made her laugh. She mentioned, "You were at the Battle of the Bulge." He responded, "Yeah, I'm still fighting it. You can tell by my waistline." After his joke that took her a second to catch on to, Walt continued to explain his experiences at the Battle of the Bulge. Over 1 million men, 500,000 Germans, 600,000 Americans, more than the number that fought at Gettysburg, and 55,000 British fought in the battle. Three American armies, six corps, the equivalent of 33 divisions, three airborne, 10 armored, and 20 infantry. There were 81,000 American casualties. In its entirety, the Battle of the Bulge was the worst battle in terms of losses to the American forces in World War II. The battle began on December 16, 1944, and was declared over on January 25, 1945. It remains the largest land battle ever fought by the United States Army. Mr. Driggs liberated a concentration camp called Wobblin Camp. He sent Interview Girl a copy of a newspaper from 1945. The German edition of the Golden Arrow paper had pictures with scenes from Wobblin Camp. She looked at the pictures and read their captions. Emaciated corpses, heaped in piles, were discovered by 8th Infantry doughboys when they took over the SS Wobblin. She lifted up the yellow sticky note attached to the paper to find a picture of deceased emaciated corpses. On the sticky note that Mr. Driggs attached to the paper, he wrote, "I was there. When you call, I'll just tell you how it was." There you have it. That is what Interview Girl was doing in this project. While someone still could, she wanted him to tell her As Mr. Driggs wrote, she wanted him to tell her himself just what it was like at the camp. She would have that newspaper in years to come, but right now, she had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Driggs, to ask a man what it was actually like to liberate a concentration camp. The article discussed how the deceased people from Wobblin Camp were buried. Walt referred to Wobblin Camp as images instilled in my mind. Walt's company took over the SS camp at Wobblin, a concentration camp. Walt described the horrific experience as he said, "The Germans did not feed the prisoners that were left alive after killing thousands of others. I can still smell the odor left from all the killed and dying prisoners. The horror of that place was beyond belief. There was a trench of about 200 feet long. The bodies were dumped there on top of each other without any dignity. There was a large room with shower heads above. This is where they killed prisoners en masse. They were told to undress because they were going to take showers, but instead they were gassed. After killing the people, the showers were used to clean up the mess. The prisoners that were still alive had to take the bodies to the furnaces. There were three large ones." The 82nd Airborne came in after Walt's unit. Walt noted that they were shocked at the atrocities committed at the camp. They gathered local men to help remove all the bodies for identifications and proper burials. The newspaper article that Mr. Driggs sent to Interview Girl explained it as, "Under the supervision of the 8th Infantry Division, United States Army, by whom the surviving prisoners of the camp were liberated, God is our refuge and strength." Mr. Driggs was a member of the 8th Infantry Division who helped liberate the remaining prisoners in the Wobblin camp. Walt's hearing was limited to one ear. To explain that to Interview Girl, he said, "When watching TV, it seems like the language is Greek or some other language. If it were not for the written message on the bottom of the screen, I would not get any news," he joked. "The problem with my hearing being limited to one ear is that it drives my wife nuts. She thinks my only response is, 'What? And huh?'" Mr. Driggs also spoke of the casualties that he saw with his very own eyes. Walt started by telling her a story about one day when it was daylight and he was on the beach, and he saw something coming out of the water. He waded out into the water and noticed that it was what was left of a sailor. He described, "His face and eyes were gone, and only one ear was left. I dragged him to the shore, but then had to leave, because there was firing up above. On his jacket was the name Bell." Walt also shared another brief memory that would pop into his mind throughout his life. He could not remember where it was, but there was a time when some of his troops were frozen. "Literally frozen," he exclaimed. Seeing casualties, seeing death like that must have been something that was difficult for the at-time teenage soldiers. Many decades and a well-lived life after the war, the vets still vividly remember the casualties that they saw when they were in World War II. These next stories are the stories that Walt told Interview Girl as he prefaced, "The following events are not in chronological order, but they are images I live with every day." World War II was 7 decades ago. "Images I live with every day," Walt paused. "That's a lot of days." Mr. Driggs began, "We were at the back of a tank. There were about 10 of us in all. The tank started to button up, so we knew that there was trouble. There was a machine gunner, and a German was throwing a hand grenade at them. They all slid off the tank and went for a ditch that was next to them. Everyone made it into the ditch except for Perry. When he stood, he took the grenade in the stomach. He fell off the tank and Walt pulled him into the ditch. At this point, he was still alive and his intestines were spilling out. Walt then described, "I rolled him on his back and his intestines were mixed up in with his clothes. I cut his shirt away and gave him a shot of morphine. I put his intestines back in his stomach and sprinkled my packet of penicillin over his gut. I used his belt to help close up his stomach. Still conscious, he asked Walt if he was going to die. Walt told him, "Hell no." About 20 minutes later, a medic showed up in a Jeep and we loaded him onto the stretcher and I helped take him out of the ditch. Before interview girl could ask Walt if Perry made it, Walt shared, "I still wonder what happened to him. Did he make it?" Walt described an encounter that he and another GI, who was from Colorado, had with two German guards. Walt and the GI from Colorado were given orders to cross the Elbe River and see what the enemy strength was on the other side. He explained that they both had lamp blackout on their face and took off anything, clothing, etc., that might shine. He said that they did not have weapons, only their trench knife. He told interview girl that they did not have weapons because if they were captured, it would be better for them. It was 2 a.m. when they were taken to the water's edge, and they were presented with a flat-bottom boat with two paddles. Once across the river, it was 2 miles to the camp. Interview girl pictured that night during World War II, as Walt described. There was enough moonlight to see. They saw two white tents, and there were two guards. Walt put his hand over the guard's mouth so that he would not yell out. The guard bit Walt's hand, and Walt could not get it loose. The other GI came over and stabbed the German guard to death so that Walt could get loose. Walt paused and then added, "I still have the scar where it bit me." Before interview girl could interject, Walt added, "What is really sad was that both of the Germans were only kids, about 12 or 13 years old." Walter Driggs went into a successful career in life. He personally built the maintenance and operations sections of the county's sanitary sewer and drainage system. Mr. Driggs would never say, "I can't do it." Interview girl sat there with Mr. Driggs' book about the combat history in the 8th Infantry Division in World War II in her hand, knowing Driggs would soon pass away like many others from his generation. Having the history everyone had access to, what the book said, having had the interview with him and his notations in the book that detailed his experiences in the infantry division, from these pieces, she had to now tell his story. She had talked to him and she had heard his stories. She was privileged enough to have him answer her questions. He told her how it was. She now sits here with the newspaper from 1945 that he sent to her with his own handwritten sticky notes attached to the paper, and she remembers chasing time with Mr. Driggs a few years back. It was a brief opportunity to speak with someone who was at the Battle of the Bulge and someone who helped to liberate the Wobblin camp. She is glad that she had seized the opportunity while it was available to catch Mr. Driggs' story. Today's Story Share, World War II Stories episode, was Mr. Driggs' story, a veteran from World War II. There are some things in life that we just have to do. Mr. Driggs can teach us all to just do it. As always, we will leave you with our question quest. What job do you need to get done in your life? What can you just do? We encourage you to visit www.worldwar2stories.com to find out more about the Interview Girl Foundation's upcoming documentary film, Chasing Time. Thank you for being a part of another episode of Story Share, the podcast from the Interview Girl Foundation that brings you inspiring stories and advice each week.